Well, thank you to the people who, despite never having seen an alien spacecraft land in their yard, be specific there, never miss helping us produce a show. Senior producer Gary Niederhoff and operations manager Barbara Vance.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and to the William K. Bose Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the skies, we hope, but also to our monthly look at critical thinking, Skeptic Check. This episode is Aliens, the Evidence. If you'd like to hear more Skeptic Check or other Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a listener who prefers to hear our show on over-the-air radio, because you might just tune in the aliens, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show.
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.
This is the magic of radio, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm Lynn. I'm your host today, and we are discussing the Motor City Brass Band with director-conductor Craig Strain and artistic chair Mark Stevens. Welcome so much.
Well,
it's good
you
to have you here on Impact.
Thank you.
This is always exciting when we talk about brass bands and people don't know what that is. And we were talking a little bit before about one of the concerts where we have 300 people on stage. And I really don't think it matters how big your stage is. That's still a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
It's a lot of people. So far as our season goes, Craig, why don't we get started with you and tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, your history.
I'm a retired music educator, and I do a lot of composing and arranging. I have several musical groups myself that I play in or direct. I'm very proud to be the director of the Motor City Brass Band, which has been around for 20 years. And
wow.
I came in very early, second rehearsal, and got hired to be the director, and I've been doing it ever since.
You missed the first one.
Yeah, I had a dentist appointment.
So after you got done with the dentist, then you became part of
Motor City Brass Band.
There you go.
And it's for 20 years. It's just continued to get more professional and a higher quality of performance. And we have one of the most committed, loyal groups of musicians that I think you'll find anywhere, because they're all volunteers, and we have 20, 25 performances a year, and we rehearse every Monday. Christmas falls on a Monday this year.
Yes, it does.
So we won't be rehearsing on Christmas or New Year's, but we rehearse more than most anybody I know of, and they're very dedicated musicians.
What's the size of the band?
32.
Okay.
And that's all brass and four percussion.
Okay.
And it's a little different than, the instrumentation is a little unusual if you're not familiar with brass bands. We use cornets instead of trumpets.
Orchestras and jazz bands and rock bands that have trumpets never use cornets. And concert bands years ago had cornets, but they've all morphed over onto trumpets, except for the British style brass band, where we do use cornets. And we use tenor horns, or sometimes called alto horns, instead of French horns, euphoniums, baritones. A lot of concert bands intermix those. In our situation, the baritone is definitely a different instrument than the euphonium. Trombones, E-flat basses and B-flat basses, flugelhorn, an E-flat soprano cornet on top of everything, and then percussion. So essentially they're all conical bore instruments except the trombones, and that allows us to have a much more homogeneous blending kind of chorale sound. I liken it to a chorus. Everybody's voice is a little bit different, but it's a lot more similar than, let's say, a flute to a saxophone. So all these conical bore instruments can blend much more than, let's say, an orchestra. As great as an orchestra is, mm-hmm. you can get a better blend with a brass band.
Okay. As I understand it, the difference between a band and an orchestra is the strings.
Yes.
Basically. So do you ever move while you're performing?
Interesting you would ask that question, because we pride ourselves in having what we call an audience-friendly approach to the music, everything from jazz and pop to extremely serious classical music. And we like to do some interaction with the audience, and sometimes we stage the band in different places in the auditorium. Sometimes there's a couple players up in the president's box, and we do some movement. So you can always expect that with a Motor City Brass Band mm-hmm. concert. It's going to be something unusual and different.
Expect the unexpected.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us a little bit about the background of the English Brass Band and how that influenced you.
Well, the English Brass Band started about 200 years ago. And they started in the company towns, the mining towns or the mills. The company owned everything. And so the workers in the evenings they'd gather at the pubs, and they started getting a little bit more politically active, and the companies really didn't like that too much. So they decided they would buy these brass instruments and start bands. And every town had their own band. And as the bands grew and got better, they decided to start competing against each other. And so you've got all these literally thousands of towns in England, Wales, Scotland, and they have these great competitions, and it has spread out of Great Britain into all over Europe, through North America, and there's even some great brass bands down in Australia and New Zealand. They're also going into the Orient now. So it's a very different, like Craig said, it's a very different kind of group, and it can be very, very exciting, much more exciting sometimes than some of the better known things like the orchestra or the concert band.
Okay.
Well, there's also a strong connection with the Salvation Army, which uses the same instrumentation as the British Style Brass Band. And so when we first started, we relied heavily on Salvation Army musicians. People, if you just find, for instance, you find a trumpet player and you say, well, we want you to play in our organization, but you need to play cornet. Well, the first thing they say is, I don't own a cornet. So we had to build up an inventory of the right instruments. Tenor horns, nobody has a tenor horn. They play French horns, you know. So we relied on bringing in members from the Salvation Army, because they would have a tendency to have those instruments because they use the same instrumentation. And in fact, we rehearse in a Salvation Army facility. So there's a definite connection and brotherhood between the Motor City Brass Band and the Salvation Army Brass Bands.
What is the difference between a cornet and a trumpet?
A cornet is a little bit shorter and has a conical bore as opposed to a cylindrical bore, which means the interior bore opens up gradually in a cornet. In a trumpet, it tends to stay the same until near the end, and so there's more of a piercing, narrow, heroic sort of a sound, and a cornet gets a mellower, warmer sound. And so when you have the tenor horn, which is conical bore, and the baritones, euphoniums, the basses, they're all conical bores, but the trombones. And we like to say that cylindrical bore in the trombones adds a little sizzle to the band, but in general, there's just more of a darker, warmer sound with the cornets and conical bore instruments.
Okay. You were talking about the size of the Motor City Brass Band. What about the size of the Salvation Army bands? Are those about the same size or fewer people?
Sometimes there's more.
Okay.
And the bigger ones, the ones out of New York and Chicago, they tend to have a few extra players. We're restricted because we do national competitions, and so there's a limit to what we can have. And there's also a philosophy associated with the American brass bands, and that is not much doubling on parts, meaning each person has their own part to play. There's a little bit of doubling in the cornet section, but there's only one first trombone and one first euphonium. And with a large concert band or symphony orchestra, you could have 8 first violins and 8 second violins, but that concept is a little bit different. Our concept is more of an expanded brass quintet from that point of view, at least from the no doubling point of view.
Okay. All right. Wow. And we kind of jumped back and forth. Mark, you didn't get an opportunity to introduce yourself. And I asked you before we went on air to tell me everything you do, and you did. And that was about 5 minutes worth of conversation. So we'll have you repeat what you told me.
Well, we can do the Reader's Digest version.
Oh.
Well, the most important thing I do with the band, I'm the principal euphonium player.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been the chairman for the board of directors. And once I finished with 5 years of doing that, I thought I was going to be able to relax and just play my horn. But about a little over 10 years ago, we started a youth brass band.
Right.
And right. The conductor, the young lady that was asked to be the conductor for the youth brass band, was the artistic committee chair. So she didn't feel like she could do both, so they came to me and said, you know, we need you to do this now. So I've been chairing the artistic committee, and really what we do is we work with Craig on deciding exactly what we're going to do on stage. We pick out the music, we decide what kind of staging we're going to do, what kind of shtick we're going to try and pull off, and Craig really, as the music director, has final say, but it's really a big collaborative effort. So in addition to chairing the artistic committee, I also am the webmaster for the band. I'm also the webmaster for the North American Brass Band Association. And then for the band, I also do some of the graphic design. I've done posters and programs in the past. So a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to know that there are a number of committees and chairpersons, but by far the artistic committee is the most effective in terms of making decisions that help make the band what it is today. We meet once a month, and people come with an open mind and throw out ideas, and nobody gets bent out of shape if we don't accept their idea. It's a very positive, sharing, cooperative kind of a committee, and very effective in a huge percentage of what this band is about comes from the artistic committee.
Wow. It sounds like a huge time commitment, too. I mean, this is a commitment to be part of this organization. I can feel that.
Absolutely. And when somebody approaches me about wanting to join the band, one of the first things I say to them is that. It's a huge commitment. And if you don't have your Monday nights free and you have a supportive, loving spouse who says, yes, I don't mind you practicing every night and going to all these rehearsals and performances, then you could be a good member of our band. But if you come and join and then a month later you realize, wow, this is way more than I thought. So I try to tell them right up front, mm-hmm. It takes a special kind of a person to be able to commit to this, because the music is very challenging, and so there's a lot of time at home for practicing, and then of course our rehearsals and our performances, so it does take a lot.
Mm-hmm. And this goes on year round?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
There's no time off. There's no break.
No vacation.
Right.
You know, something I thought of when Craig was talking about supportive spouses, we just got the one of the big pieces we have for our national competition in April, and Craig gave me my copy Friday night, and my wife turned to me and she said, she's looking over my shoulder at the music, says, is this what I'm going to have to listen to for the next 4 months?
And the answer is
yes.
Is that a piece she likes?
She likes, well, let's just say that I'm hoping it will grow on her.
Ah, okay.
When we go to the competition, there's a time parameter, and we get to pick one. We get to fill it up with whatever we like, and traditionally bands will play one piece that they've picked, sometimes two, and then one piece that the organization selects for everybody in that classification to play so they can compare them.
Mm-hmm.
And the name, we call it the test piece, and it's a test piece because it tests the band. It will be probably the hardest thing we'll play this year, hardest thing since last year's test piece, and so there's a lot of playing at home of the same piece over and over and over.
About how long? What's the duration of that piece?
The test piece is about 12 and a half minutes.
That's a good size.
Yeah, and the piece we selected is about 11 and a half. Okay. And the bulk of our focus will be on that. Now, we're working very hard towards our Halloween concert, and then there'll be the Sounds of the Season concert. But when we can, everybody has the test piece music. They're practicing at home, and we'll play it in some of the rehearsals when we can. And then after Sounds of the Season, it's full bore out. We have two rehearsals a week. We have a lot of sectionals, and we really take this seriously. And we go because it makes us a better band. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We come out way from NABBA, and we're playing at a higher level than we were before we went. So,
how many bands are competing in this?
Last year, I think there were 24. Which is the most they've ever had.
Okay. All right.
And it's a huge huge undertaking putting all that together.
Oh,
because not only on Saturday do you have all the bands competing, but on Friday they have a solo and ensemble competition. So you have hundreds of events going on Friday.
Okay. Okay. And the bands are from all over the country?
All over the country. In the past, we've had a couple of bands from Europe come over to compete, but that's unusual. Most of the bands are from about Kansas City East.
Okay.
Although there is one band from Colorado that comes in.
Okay. I guess when I think about Western states, I don't really think about brass bands.
There are brass bands out there.
Right,
it's
right.
Just that the competition has normally been held in the Midwest.
Okay.
And so right. I think travel is the big detriment for some of the Western bands to come out.
And where does the competition take place this year?
This year it's going to be in scenic Fort Wayne, Indiana.
All righty.
Actually, this is, I think, the third or fourth year we've been in Fort Wayne, mm-hmm. and they have a beautiful theater there, and they have a couple of hotels right nearby. It's actually a really nice place.
It's only a 3-hour drive, terrible. Yeah. A mm-hmm.
couple of years they've had it at the DeVos Performing Arts Center mm-hmm. in Grand Rapids.
Right.
And we've been in Columbus. We've been in Cincinnati. We've been in
Kentucky,
Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Fort Myer, Virginia. We were hosted by the U.S. Army Band.
Wow.
So it moves around, but we're going back to Fort Wayne this next year.
Okay. Sounds fantastic. And Craig, you mentioned gearing up for the Horns and Howls. The program for the season is 4 concerts.
Correct.
Do you want to briefly address those, and then we'll really talk about Horns and Howls?
Sure. Well, our annual Halloween concert, which is always a hoot, as they say, and we wear costumes, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. The second concert is our Sounds of the Season, which is a holiday concert. And we're really excited this year because we're bringing in Stephen Mead and his wife Misa, two of the finest euphonium players in the world. He travels around the world performing, and we feel like we've just struck it rich with this, because he will draw musicians, euphonium players, and others. And we're going to do a clinic for musicians who just want to come and hear what he has to say, and then he's going to play. And she's going to play, and it's going to be great. Our third concert is the Festival of Bands, and we're just about finalizing who the bands are going to be. And as Mark said, there'll be 20 minutes each, and then a combined finale gala that William Himes will direct. And then the fourth concert of the season in June is It's a Mystery, and we briefly mentioned that, but we'll have a thread that runs through all the pieces during the concert that are clues, and there'll be a sort of like a guessing game for the audience to try to figure out what the mystery is.
All right. So the listeners have to understand that you do have a plan.
Yes.
It's not something on the schedule. We're not sure yet.
Yeah.
This is a real mystery.
Yeah, it'll be a mystery.
Okay.
And coming up on the 29th of October, our Halloween concert, and that's always a lot of fun. The band all wears costumes, and we encourage the audience to wear costumes, and any adults in the audience that are wearing a costume, we invite them up on the stage, and we line them up, and we put our hands over their head, and the audience applauds, and we pick a winner, a first and second prize, and that's always a lot of fun. And any of the kids who wear costumes, we have a parade across the stage. We play some music while the kids come. And some of them are 5 and 6 years old. Or even
younger,
going up to 10 or 12, 14. And they come across the stage, and everybody claps, and we give them a treat, like in Trick or Treat.
Right.
So that's great fun, too.
Okay. And that's coming up on the 29th. At the Ford Performing Arts Center in Dearborn.
Right, 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Tickets are available from any band member. You get a discount if you buy it from a band member, or you can just call the Ford Community Performing Arts Center and get your tickets there, 313-943-2350.
Okay.
Or you can buy a ticket that day, but sometimes there's a long line, so we encourage everybody to get their ticket ahead of time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the music for horns and howls is widely varied, from very serious Don's Macabre to funny, light Beetlejuice and all kinds of stuff in between. We're very fortunate that our bass trombone player, John Martin, has a tremendous voice, and he's going to sing an arrangement of Shenandoah, which will be wonderful.
Mm.
We've got everything, light stuff like Soul Bossa Nova, some heavier. We got a wonderful Irish piece that has great excitement of Irish themes in it, called Lord Tullamore. So it's just a wide variety of fun music. The concert lasts about an hour and a half, and it's great fun. And if the people out in our audience listening, if you haven't been to see the Halloween concert, put on a costume and come, because you're going to have a lot of fun.
Right. I've been there for those, and it is a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Are you two disclosing your costumes yet for the concert? Or
are we?
Is that
a secret? I don't know. Well, actually, I actually cannot disclose at this time what my costume is. The people would just have to come to the concert and see.
Okay.
I think I'll tell them what I'm
okay.
going to wear. I'm going to be Beetlejuice.
Ah.
And in a rare moment of wisdom, I bought my costume right after Halloween last year. Normally at this time of the year, I'm trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to be and where I can get it. It's been in my closet for 11 months, and I'm really, really pleased with myself for doing that.
Well, I think that my favorite costume of yours was the year you decided to come as Batman. And he comes out on stage, he got this great Batman costume on, we go to start playing the first number, and he starts conducting and realizes that with the mask and everything on, he can't see his music. So he's trying to conduct and pull off his mask at the same time.
And not to mention, it was not rubber, but some sort of rubber compound, and it was really hot, and sweating, and sweat was rolling down my eyes, and I'm holding it up with one hand. That was a mistake.
How's the headgear for Beetlejuice?
Well, it's a wig, and it has like a bald area on top of it,
right.
But it doesn't cover my face. I will have makeup on my face, white makeup and black eyes, but
okay.
Nothing. No more am I going to cover my eyes with anything. One year I was Dracula, and we built this huge coffin. And the band comes out in groups, 1 and 2 and 3, and they walk in front of the stage, and people clap, and then they sit down. So everybody was on the stage, and the trombones were dressed as skeletons. And they carried the coffin in from the back and set it on the stage, but no one knew I was in the coffin. They just thought it was a prop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a little bit of an angle, sitting on a crate or something. And there was a blue light inside of it, and I had this big Dracula cape and costume, you know. So the lights came down, got quiet, and the audience was like, where the heck is Craig? Where's the director? When is this starting? Then from inside, I just pushed the top up,
mm-hmm.
and stepped out with my big cape, and everybody was
yeah.
It was a great moment.
Oh, that's fun. Any costume stories, Mark?
Any costume stories? Well, I will not mention the year that my wife talked me into a sort of superhero costume, Captain Obvious. And somehow she got me to wear tights.
Okay.
Yeah, picture that.
And yeah, no, you don't want to.
This
it wasn't
radio.
A pretty picture. No, it's probably a good thing it's radio. But yeah, that was the worst. And we are not going to repeat that one.
Okay.
She had a much better idea this year.
Okay. All right. And we'll see that on the 29th.
You'll see that on the 29th.
Okay. All right. Any costume malfunctions as you're... You have to be prepared, Craig. You have to be prepared for your arms to move like crazy because you're conducting. And Mark, you have to be prepared to not get things caught up
right.
in your instrument.
Yeah, I pretty much think those things through prior to... In fact, I put on the costume and I try playing and make sure... Like this year, I know that there won't be any problems.
Okay.
But we have had people who we had one guy in the band wore a ghillie suit, which basically it looks like he's a bush, and he came out and he was going to try and play through the little hole in the thing, and it did not work at all. But I don't think we've had any major malfunctions other than Craig trying to pull the reveal that he actually was Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Okay.
One year I was a cook or a chef, and we had a table that looked like a chef's table, whatever that is, and it was on wheels, and on the top of it was a tray with food around it and a big dome. Like would be over a pheasant or something. Well, my son was inside, and his head was sticking up through a hole, and his face, we put white makeup on his face. And so I came out pushing this tray, and the audience was pretty impressed right there. And then I lifted the big dome cover off, and there was a white head, and it looked like a fake head. It looked like I was cooking a head,
okay.
In other words. But it was all white makeup, and he was motionless. And people were looking at him like, wow, that's pretty cool. It actually looks like a head, that fake head. Then he moved his head and smiled, and the audience gasped because he was inside the box, and they could only see this head that they thought was a fake head until he smiled and moved his head. We need to do that again. That was a good one.
Some sort of audience... surprise.
Yeah.
Right.
They never saw coming.
Right.
No,
exactly.
They did not.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
It is for the audience too.
Yeah, and one thing that we're playing that I'm really happy that we're doing and kind of give the audience a little taste of, we've talked about our national competition. We've been working on our choice piece mm-hmm. for the national competition for a little while now. And we've decided we're going to put that on this program as well. So in addition to the really, you know, there's some really fun, light stuff like Thriller and Batman and Beetlejuice. There's a piece called Tritico by Jim Curnow, who is a local product. He's from Port Huron.
Yeah.
And I think he grew up in Royal Oak. Mm-hmm. And very fine composer. And this piece, Tritico, is a very interesting piece. It's based on a hymn tune, and he just plays with that tune all the way through the piece. And it's going to be a great thing for, it's a kind of a great thing for us because we got a huge head start on that going into April's competition. But I think it's also going to be really fun for the audience to hear just what a brass band can do with a major work like that.
Mm-hmm. Would we recognize the hymn? Or has it changed a lot?
Do you go to church?
Yes. Yes, I do.
It's
then there's a possibility.
Well, I know that the name of the tune is Consolation. And I recognized it when we first played it but yet it's something that, you know, you put other words to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that's used more in the Salvation Army than maybe other places.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds absolutely interesting, absolutely fascinating. And you're right. This gives you kind of a step ahead, a step up, where you're able to perform and then go into the competition months mm-hmm. later and get a feel for
right.
it.
A couple months ago, we were talking in the artistic committee meeting, and I said, I think we should program this piece at the Halloween. We've never done it. We've never programmed a NABBA piece this early in the season. And so that encouraged us to work harder on it earlier. Mm-hmm. We feel pretty happy about making that decision.
Okay. You brought some music with you.
I did. I brought a recording of a festive overture from one of our concerts last year by Dmitri Shostakovich. It'll show you what the band can sound like.
Okay, let's take a little break and we'll listen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess we can say wow.
Yeah, we can. Wow with pride.
Yeah. Nice, nice sound. Tell us a little bit about the piece.
Oh, gosh. It's a classic in terms of concert bands and orchestras, one of Shostakovich's most famous pieces. And most of us had played it sometime prior in college, or even if people happened to be in a very good high school band. One of the interesting things about Transcriptions, which is a piece that was originally written for a different instrumentation in a brass band, let's put it this way. In an orchestra, the brass players have lots of spaces where they rest, and the strings are playing, the woodwinds are playing, and in a brass band, there's no resting. Mm-hmm. There's no strings or woodwinds to carry part of the load, and so one of the things people have to adapt to is the grueling amount of playing in a particular piece. Another interesting difference in a concert band, usually, or at least often, the bass players, the tuba players, are playing a pretty simple bass line, occasionally a little bit of a challenging line. Not the case at all with a brass band. The tuba parts are very much technically challenging, as are the cornet parts. I mean, tell that story about the guy from we went to, we were fortunate enough to go to Washington, D.C. right after 9/11. It had already been scheduled, and then 9/11 happened, and then we voted and decided let's go anyway. So 2 weeks later, we were playing in the Kennedy Center, and Mark has a good story about the tuba player.
After we played the concert, we played at the Kennedy Center, and the tuba player for the National Symphony was there. And so naturally he came up and went back to the back of the band to see the tuba players, and he looked at their music. Now, one of the things that's unique about a brass band, first of all, is that all of the parts are in treble clef. That includes the euphoniums, the baritones, the trombones, and the tubas that are normally in bass clef.
Okay.
So he looked at their music. He looked at it, said treble clef, and there's all the, he said, boy, I'm glad I don't have to play that. So, you know, the parts are, in fact, I was just thinking about it last night. I don't even remember what it was we were playing. But I think it was one of Craig's arrangements. And we got about three quarters of the way through, and I go, come on, Craig, you can throw a rest in there every now and then. So yeah, the parts are very, very different than what a concert band
or
a symphony brass player would be used to.
And I hadn't really thought about that until you mentioned it. So have you had a situation where somebody actually fainted because they kind of ran out of air, or?
No, we did have a player playing the soprano cornet part, the high challenging part, who looked at one point like he might be going to pass out, but
he often looked like he was going to pass out.
Yeah. And you know, another interesting thing about the fact that it's an all-volunteer group and that everybody is there because they love it and they want to be there. We did a series of concerts at Greenfield Village, 4th of July, when they have four concerts in four nights, and we were the guests, and we were on stage next to the symphony. We played 20 minutes or so, and then there was a little break, and then they played, and then we played, and then we played together. And one of the trumpet players, a friend of mine, had said to me after the first concert we did together, he said, you know, we envy you. And I thought, you envy us? You're the Detroit Symphony, you know. You're the pinnacle of professional playing, instrument playing. And I said, how do you mean that? And he said, you know, for us, it's our life, and we're musicians, and we love it, but this is a job. For you, it's a passion. Mm-hmm. And he said, you all come together and rehearse because you love playing the music, and we're a little envious of that. And boy, that,
wow.
Yeah, that set me back a little bit.
Yeah. To state the obvious, everybody in your organization has a day job.
That's right, a day job, and most of them have families and other obligations, and so it takes a special personality, a special commitment, a special love of what we're doing, mm-hmm. to be part of the organization. And we, unlike some community bands, which is more casual, let's say, and there's some great ones out there, But there's the average community band, they don't get 100% turnout in the rehearsals. Now, we don't always either, but we get a much higher percentage week to week than somebody who might enjoy playing their clarinet in a community band and go to a couple of rehearsals and then do the concert and then not come back for a while. You know, we don't have that. We definitely have a commitment that's...
Yeah.
Mark likes to tell the story of how I'm kind of fanatic about starting on time and ending on time. My philosophy is if you want them to be there ready to go when it's time to start, then you should stop on time. Mm-hmm. And that's only fair. And I don't know, a month or so ago, we were playing a really exciting piece, and there were about 32 bars maybe to go, and the clock said 9:30, and I stopped. And I said, okay, thanks, everybody. And about 20 people in unison, wait, can we finish this? Can we go on at least another minute beyond your anal time concept? Yeah.
And then there was the time that Craig's watch broke.
Oh.
And it broke. We start rehearsal at 7:20.
Okay.
And his watch broke at about 7:10. And so we're sitting there and we're waiting.
And I'm standing right there.
Yeah, he's standing right by the podium, and we're waiting and we're waiting. And finally, about 25 after, I said, are we going to start? Well, it's not time yet. And yes, it is.
Everybody was stunned that it was beyond 7:20 and we weren't playing.
Yeah. So you have a lot of fun with it, too.
You know, that's one of the interesting things. Everybody in this band has a wonderful personality, loving, caring. They love music and they love each other and they're supportive. We don't have this business where somebody makes a mistake and the person near them kind of grins because, ha-ha, that person made a mistake.
Yeah.
Not that that's real common, but it does happen in organizations. And in our organization, everybody's pulling for everybody else, and that makes it just wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful to rehearse and wonderful to perform. And people in the audience see that. They sense it, and they enjoy it, and it helps with the connection between the band and the audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the band really is a family. When about 9 years ago, I had a really rough time. And I don't know how I would have gotten through it if it hadn't been for this band.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody is always there for everybody else. And it's really the most open and welcoming group of people I think I've ever been around.
Fantastic.
Which makes... Craig's used the word committed, and we kind of have a joke that says, you know, you have to be committed to be in this band, or maybe you should be. But that just goes along with, you know, we have fun. I don't think there's a rehearsal, no matter how intense, no matter how things are going, there's not a rehearsal that goes by that we don't laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's just, you know, making fun of Craig about something, we laugh.
That's why he's there. you were talking about the Detroit Symphony, world-class symphony, and there are things that have happened on stage that I've seen, and I don't really know a lot, but there are certain things that, you know, are not correct, like when the mute comes out of the trombone and it bounces
hits the floor.
The floor.
Yeah.
It bounced a couple times. I saw a bow just kind of
a violin bow flies across the orchestra.
Actually, this was cello.
Cello, okay.
And it went into the audience. Yeah,
it just
right through. So stuff does happen, and you know, no harm, no foul, really.
Yeah.
Any horror stories that you care to share like that?
Closest thing I can think of is one year. We get down to the North American Championships, which I think it was in somewhere in Charleston, West Virginia. And our first chair trombone player, we on Friday, we usually have a rehearsal down there before the Saturday competition. We get to rehearsal and he says, I forgot my suit.
He meekly raises his hand because... In spite of this friendly, smiling face you see right here, sometimes I can be a little intense.
A little intense.
And he raises his hand, I don't have my black suit. And we're going to play the next day on stage, you know. Everybody's going to be in a black suit, but this idiot. And so I said to the band, and, you know, I thought, no chance, but any chance somebody brought two suits.
Right.
And a fellow had three suits.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was the same size.
That's...
yeah.
Wow.
That was really... And so he went and bought a white shirt and a tie, and he wore Pete's suit, and all was fine.
And who knew, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that was 10 years ago, more?
Oh, more than that.
More, and
yeah.
We still bring it up. Oh. We still talk about it. He's long gone, but... we still talk about it. It makes a good example when we say, don't forget everything. Mouthpiece, instrument, music, suit. And everybody kind of smiles. Oh, yeah, the suit guy.
It's a great thing about the band is the institutional memory. There are some things that will just never die.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And nor should they.
Nor should they, yeah.
Wow. Any really amazing moments while on stage or something that happened with an audience member?
Well, unfortunately, we had a person die in our audience one time, yeah. And we were playing a veterans concert, a patriotic concert, and the fella had been working for 10 years to try to get his community to bring us in to play, and in the middle of the first piece, he was off the stage, but next to the stage, he just fell over, and, well, we didn't know. I was directing the piece, and I didn't know what to do. So after that piece, we stopped. EMS came, and they were working on him, and a couple other people who were running the festival ran up to me and said, just go on with the concert. That's the best thing to do right now, and we'll take the ambulance will take him to the hospital. That was a moment of, what the heck do we do now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure. So the show went on.
The show went on.
The show went on, yes. Yeah.
Wow. And he actually did die on stage.
He was standing next to the stage. He had just made some announcement to the audience welcoming us.
Sure.
And he stepped off the stage and was standing off to the side listening, and we were halfway through the first piece, and he just keeled over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. There is an organization down...
Not that kind of story you were hoping for,
was it? I wasn't expecting that one. There's an organization down in Austin, Texas called Swan Songs. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Not
before. Been around for, I want to say 13 years now, I think, something like that. And it's what she does. The artist is Christine Albert. She put this thing together years ago. And if someone is in the process of dying, okay, cancer, what have you, she rounds up musicians, and they go to wherever. They might go to a hospital, or they might go to the home where, you know, the person's at home, whatever it might be, and they perform a final concert for this individual.
That is wonderful.
And I could go on for another hour, but I don't think Daddy G would be happy with that. Anyway, there's a lady who came over when she was 19 from Ireland, and she's now pushing 90, and she's transitioning, and all she wanted to hear was some of the folk music from her land, from
sure.
Ireland, right? And so they found somebody in Austin, Texas, of all places, to play this folk music, and there was one particular piece that's kind of not well-known, kind of remote, and he was able to play that one for her. And
wow.
She transitioned during the concert.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm thinking this man needed 10 years to get you guys there. And, you know, he died hearing or knowing he was going to hear some of the best music ever from his perspective. So it's a,
probably it's a, one of the most memorable horns and howls moments that we ever had. Your swan song reminded me of it. We were playing several movements from Saison, the animal, Parade of the Animals.
Yes.
And we got to the swan, and one of our trombone players, he was dressed in a tutu.
Okay.
And he proceeded to get up and started dancing around the stage while we were playing the swan.
Okay.
And fortunately for me, I was playing second euphonium at the time. First euphonium had that as a solo. And so he's sitting out, he's on the end of the row right in front when Richard starts dancing around the front of the band. And we didn't know he was going to do this. And so Mike was desperately trying to keep from laughing as this guy in a tutu comes dancing by him.
What's the name of the... I'm drawing a blank on the name of the fellow who I took his music and wrote the arrangement for, and we had him come.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine who plays guitar, I play in a 10-piece R&B band too, and the guitar player, his day job is to go around to retirement homes and play the guitar and have sing-alongs.
Sure.
And so he told me about this guy whose name will pop in our minds any minute, second now, who was in his right around 90, who pulled my friend Bobby aside one day and said, I have a whole lot of music that I've written in my career and I want you to take a look at it. So Bobby went to his room. Bobby is a fabulous singer and guitar player, but he's not what you might call a schooled musician.
Okay.
So he looked at the music and he really didn't know what to say, you know. So he said, I have this friend, Craig, can I take this and show it, this march that you wrote, and show it to him? And he said, oh, that would be wonderful. So he brought it to me, and I looked at it, and I said, you know, this is not just some hobby. This guy knows what he's doing. I'd like to talk to him. Because it turned out that he had no family, and nobody at this home knew about his huge career in music as a composer and a player, and he had all this music and all these memories, and nobody to relate it to. So I wanted to meet this guy. So I met him. And I asked him where he went to school. He went to Cass Tech, and I knew some of the directors from way back then. Historically, I knew about, you know, Cass Tech had the greatest high school music program in the country for mm-hmm. quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so he lit up when I started mentioning these names of his orchestra director and that, because now he had a connection with somebody who knew. And I started thinking about any of us could be 90 and have a career in any area and not be able to share any of it with anybody and just have it in our minds and then sit in our room with our head down every day waiting to die. So I said, I'm going to take this piece and I'll put it in my computer and create a file so that you, and I'll bring it back, and when Bobby's going to have one of his sessions with the 30 or 40 people in the room singing, we're going to play this and we're going to say, he wrote this. And so that was a huge success. And then I decided, I'm going to write an arrangement for the brass band, and we're going to play it in one of our concerts, and invite him to come and be in the audience. Mm-hmm. And so I told this whole story about this guy, and then I said to the audience, and he's sitting right over here. And then we played the piece, and it was like uh-huh. playing for somebody who's dying.
Yeah,
you know, it was a wonderful moment.
Yeah.
It was a nice piece, too.
Yeah, it was a decent piece, wow. Yeah.
Wow. So the bottom line is music is incredibly important to so many people.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
I know that it's been helpful for people with dementia, mm-hmm. People with autimmune type diseases where mm-hmm. you can have a string of really bad days.
Right.
And music mm-hmm. is an escape.
Yep.
And I think what you guys do is absolutely phenomenal.
Norbert is his name, by the way.
Yes.
Okay. All
you
right.
knew it would come to you. And before we're done, I do have to give a shout out to my wonderful, understanding boss for letting me come here and visit with you today.
Ah, okay. As we said, everybody has a day job.
That's right.
Any parting thoughts about Horns and Howls?
Only that it's so much fun, it's hard to describe, and we encourage people to wear costumes, but if you have kind of a B personality and that's not your thing, you're certainly welcome to come. We'll all be in costumes, and some of the audience will be in costumes. And the music is widely varied, from crazy fun stuff to serious, and it's a blast. And for that price, you can't do any better.
All right. Avoid the rubber masks.
Avoid the rubber masks.
And remember, it's more than a concert.
Yeah.
It's a show.
Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Craig and Mark, thank you so much for being here today with Impact. And we're going to play as much of the cut again as we can.
Great. Well, thanks for having us. We very much appreciate it.
Telephone number one more time for tickets for Horns and Howls Plus.
It's at 313-943-2350 or go to mcbb.org and you can order tickets through the band.
Okay. And again, you get a discount if you go through the band, which is kind of cool.
That is correct.
And you can get tickets day of, but there might be a line, so we have to be careful about that. But all that said, thank you so much for being here today. This was
Thank you.
A riot. I'm still trying to picture you. I wasn't there that year, so I didn't see the, but I'm looking forward to the Beetlejuice. We'll see how that goes.
Great.
And Mark with his surprise.
Yeah, yes. Who knows? Yeah.
No tights.
No, there no will tights. Be no tights
okay.
this year.
Oh, my gosh. Craig and Mark, thank you so much for being here with Impact, and thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Thank you.